Welcome to the Kenmare Resources PLC half-yearly results conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I will now turn the call over to your host, Managing Director Michael Carvill. Sir, you may begin.
Morning, everyone. It's Michael Carvill here. I'm in London with Tony McCluskey. Deirdre Corcoran is Tony McCluskey and Virginia Skrowski, and in Dublin, Deirdre Corcoran is also on the phone, and Yavi Dizzle is on the phone from Southern Africa. So, guys, thanks everyone for calling in to hear about the results announcement that we've just made. And so what I thought we would do is that I would just go through, you know, what I see as the sort of the key factors or the key issues and give you a, you know, a brief outline. And we have also posted a presentation, and Tony will take you directly to the financial part of that presentation and just run through the balance sheet, and, you know, the income statement and general aspects of the financials, and just give you a good feeling of our interpretation of them. And then we will turn it over to questions and answers from you guys. So, firstly, as far as I'm concerned, the key issue of all of this is that the expansion process to build our 50% expansion is now over. The facilities are in place. They are all operational. We are ramping them up, and that ramp up is going well. And so this is you know, the culmination, really. We have been building sort of fixing and then rebuild and then building the expansion really since 2004, and this is now the end of that huge long period of investment. And really, it's very welcome for us that we're no longer, you know, in that investment mode, and from now on, you know, the process will be a process of ramping up production and focusing on our cost situation and bringing those costs, you know, gradually down as we optimize production operations. We are happy that, quite unlike phase one, where many of the systems, when we actually started to operate them, we found that they weren't fit for purpose. We're happy that in this instance, that the systems that have been built are fit for purpose. And while we have had niggles and software glitches and this and that and the other, pumps running in the wrong way, bucket elevators not quite right, etc., there has been nothing that indicates that there are anything like the style or type of issue that we faced at the end of phase one. There's a normal ramp up. There are normal niggles. They're being resolved rapidly, and we're happy with the plant and equipment as it is now. In terms of actual production, production is going well. January and February were very muted months because, in terms of production, because of they were the last months of the transition from the Namalope Flats area to the Dunal Plateau. But post that period, production has gone well. Wet Concentrator Plant A is producing at higher levels than it has ever produced. And we are sitting with a heavy mineral concentrate stockpile of practically 60,000 tons, which again has never been the case before. We have agreed a deal with our labour unions, which provides you know, a solid and sensible basis for relations with our rank and file workers and the unionised workforce for the next 3 years. And we think this is a huge step forward, a great triumph. It's good for the unions, it's good for us, it's good for the workforce, and provides, you know, a very stable base in terms of managing labour, which is now a 31% component of our total costs. And I think that has to be seen in the context of that agreement is for an 8% increase this year, 8.2% increase next year, and 8.5% increase the following year in local currency. And that, you know, if it passes any predictor of the future, would equate to about a 3% per annum increase in dollar terms over those each year over those 3 years. And that has to be seen in context of the fact that, you know, technically capable workers are a scarce resource in Mozambique. And in Mozambique, there's, you know, an expansion of the mining industry, and the gas industry itself is pushing forward very strongly, the offshore gas industry. So there's a big pull for people. And also, it should be seen in the context of South African labor relations, where, you know, where the unions have been much less accommodating. And so I think that that's indicative of good management by our managers on site and the company generally in managing to communicate effectively with the labor force the whole way through, so that they were aware of you know, how the product market is going, how the overall situation is going, and how you know, it's important that they play a responsible role in the overall development of the company. Anyway, just as I mentioned, I believe that operationally things are going very well. Zircon is a little bit behind our production curve. That's because of a longer shutdown for connection, our linking of the new non-magnetic circuit than had been expected. We believe that there is some capacity for catch up in the zircon circuits, and so we're not changing our forecast for the year at all. Furthermore, the dip doctor and all the electrical stabilization equipment is also in and operational. So that's another significant step forward. So basically, that's operationally. That's really all I was going to say. Market is really the key thing, and here we have been somewhat confounded. We felt strongly that there would be a turnaround in the TiO2 market prior to the middle of the year, the TiO2 pigment market, and that hasn't happened. The inventory days that the pigment industry holds is an assessment. It's an assessment, so it's not an absolutely accurate figure, but that was generally assessed as being about 120 days at the start of the third quarter in 2012. And it's knocked down to between 55 and 60 days. However, you know, it probably has to get below 50 days before the pigment industry will move to a position where it can operate at a 90% operating capacity. It's presently operating in general about 80%. Some companies are operating at 90%, and some are operating at significantly less. We still wait for that turnaround. It hasn't happened as yet. There are signs of improvement in the United States. Obviously, the economy is moving forward. House starts have improved quite significantly. Europe has moved out of recession, but as yet we can't point to an increase in titanium feedstock prices. We would like to have done so, but can't. That's sort of the bad news. But we do anticipate that the pigment industry will get to its required number of days of inventory, of final product inventory, and be able to in turn change its prices sometime in the latter part of this year. when that happens, we understand that the paint and coatings industry is operating on practically zero inventory, and they've been doing that because they have seen prices of pigment gradually and continually dropping, and so consequently it's not in their interests to hold inventory if next month they could perhaps buy it more cheaply. And when the turnaround happens, they will have to restock. And as that restock happens, you know, we should see an improvement, a significant improvement in the demand profile. But as I said, this has not yet happened. Zircon volumes are up. We're seeing good demand for zircon. Customers are back to the situation of saying that they want us to load their ships early and stuff like that. We've seen small increases in price. And we don't see zircon shooting back to $2,500 a ton or anything like that, but we see gradual small increases in price as a sort of the future scenario for zircon over the medium term. So basically that's it. You know, that's operations and market. That's how we see things have gone. The results, you know, our results are, the revenues are down principally because of reduced price per ton we're getting for our material. But I'll ask Tony if he could now go and take you to the page. What is it in the presentation, Tony?
It's thanks, Michael. Good morning, everybody. It's the presentation that's up on our website includes a small section on the financials, and it's page 30 of that presentation, which might be easy for you to reference if you have it to hand. The results for the first half year are very much in line with the very detailed guidance that Kenmare has been issuing over the course of the last few months. Revenues are down about 27%, of which two-thirds is because of prices, very much along the lines that Michael mentioned, and one-third volume. On a blended basis, the total prices compared to H1 2012 are down about 21%. I'm looking to the slide that's entitled 2013 half year income statement. I'll come back to costs on a separate slide. Net finance costs are up. These include some funding costs, which include costs associated with putting in place the ABSA facility that we set up earlier this year, some costs associated with lender agreements that was signed on the 31st of July, and a small increase in interest as the amount of sub-debt increases relative to the amount of senior debt. The total increase there is about $3.5 million half year and half year. We have a very small exchange gain of $1.4 million. This is because we have a large component of euro debt, approximately $170 million of the total of 358 at the end of June, and there's a tax charge of about $1 million. This isn't actually paid because we're still using our capital allowances and losses carried forward. This tax charge doesn't include royalties of about $1.7 million that are included in operating costs, and that all results in a loss of about $10 million and a positive EBITDA of $18.9 million. Moving on to the cash operating costs, you may recall we guided $160 million in an announcement that we put out at the time of our AGM at the end of May, and we're within that, no changes. The format of that slide there is as we usually present in these presentations. The about 5.6 million operating costs have been capitalized to expansion, so are not included in this in accordance with the accounting standards, and that's very much as planned. Product stocks, as Michael mentioned, are up from 29,500 tons at the end of the calendar year 12 to 59,000 tons at the end of June. And so in coming to the adjusted cash operating costs, there's an increase in finished product inventory of $9.6 million. The costs themselves are up relative to H1 2012 for a couple of reasons. We had some impact of the climb up the Dunal Plateau, which was completely finished at the end of February, so those costs are non-recurring. But compared to H1 2012, we're also running the full marine facilities. We have two transshipment vessels now rather than one, and the labor cost increases that were negotiated in July last year all apply from that time forward, and so that applies to H1 2013. But thankfully now we've had a very good negotiation in July 2013, so I think that keeps the labor costs under reasonable control and lets us manage them going forward. And I suppose, you know, the principal thing for me is as we go forward, we see our production volumes increasing, we see a reducing cost per ton. We've already seen a significant drop from H2 2012, and this reinforces Moma's low-cost position in the industry versus peers. So as we complete the expansion ramp-up, we will shift our focus even more so to driving cost efficiencies. Moving on to the next slide, it's the usual EBITDA bridge, but I think that this reflects the points that have already been discussed. You can see there that the main change applies to prices and to a lesser extent to volumes, and then touching on the costs as I've just discussed. Next slide is the operating cash cost pie in the usual format, and there's no surprises in that. That's pretty much the same as in previous years. Turning then to the balance sheet, as you'd expect, the main investment has been in property, plant, and equipment, which is principally in the expansion. Final expansion costs now are looking like about $390 million, and our focus as a company has moved on from building to ramp up. The value in inventories has increased from $22 million-$34 million, reflecting again the increase in product stocks that I described earlier, comparing the end of December 2012 with the end of June, but also reflecting an increase in consumables and spares as we purchase more spares that will service the expanded facilities. Debtors are down, but this is principally a function of shipments. We had a very active shipping campaign in December 2012, and less so in June. It's also a function of reduced prices. The cash balance at the end of June was $31 million. Bank loans are up $34 million, and of course, this is principally the impact of the Absa facility, which has been drawn, and the increase in creditors relates to the expansion creditors in the main. Group debt sits at $358 million. As I said, the increase is mostly applicable to the Absa corporate facility. Average interest rate 8.7%. We paid about $13 million principal in February, plus the interest for our senior lenders, and we continue to roll up the subordinated loans in accordance with the loan agreements. We plan to replace or renew the Absa $40 million corporate facility by the end of March, and as announced on the 1st of August, we finalized our agreement with project lenders, and the details have previously been set out, but this increases the flexibility of the loans and helps our liquidity. The lender group continued to be very supportive, so I think that that has worked very well. Rather than go into any more detail, I'll hand back to Michael and maybe move on to Q&A.
Yeah, thanks very much, Tony. So, Joanna, perhaps you could move the conference into the Q&A section, please.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star, then one on your touchtone phone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the hash key or the pound sign. If you are using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press star, then one on your touchtone phone. Karen Crowley from Davy is online with a question.
Hi guys, good morning. Just a couple of questions. I'm just wondering, could you comment on shipments in July and August, how they've been going? And I suppose when you look into H2 as well, what do you see the market, how do you see the market behaving? And I guess I'm thinking about seasonality too, whether we should take that into account when we consider shipments for the remainder of the year. The second question is just on prices. You say that the downward pressure on prices persists, and I'm just wondering, you know, have prices moved down again since you last updated the market? Are they just stable? And here I'm talking about ilmenite principally. And Tony, just a couple of questions on the financials. Can you guide on what you think the capex for this year will be? And also, you spoke about, you know, once production or ramp-up has completed, that you will focus then on cost efficiencies. And I'm just wondering, can you tell us where you think you will be able to reduce costs? Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Karen. It's Michael speaking. Shipments, July and August have been, you know, moderately busy shipping months, Karen, with, you know, struggling to get enough for a DuPont shipment and just managing to get it away in time. So it's been normal shipping environment. Prices, I can't quite remember when we last reported on prices. When do you think that might have been?
Well, we did say at the 29th of June that the average price for the first 5 months for ilmenite was 236 zircon down to the
cost. Yeah, if we were in China trying to get ilmenite sold today, we would not get 236. So since that, you know, vis-a-vis that average, yes, it has gone down.
Okay, yeah. Tony, on the capex and cost efficiencies?
I'll come back to you on the capex, Karen, maybe a little bit later in the call. Let me just look at that. But I suppose in cost efficiencies, it's going to be across the board. As we've really been focusing on getting the expansion completed, you know, there are probably more people in some departments that, you know, are necessary and appropriate to bed the thing down. There are some consultants that we're using and have been using in 2013 to help us put in systems and structures. There are some procurement efficiencies that I'm sure when the whole thing is up and running stably, that we'll be able to embed in the thing. So, you know, I would point to labour, because as Michael said, that's our largest component. I was pleased with the agreement that we've done with the labour force, but I think that there are some numbers there that we can cut, you know, and with consultants, you know, I think that there's a whole programme there that we'll be embarking on.
Also the South African rands, downward movement vis-a-vis the dollar. Well, you know, we have got significant exposure to South African rand, so you know, that's a positive element.
That is, yeah. So I think total capex expenditure, just looking at this here, probably something in the order of $105 million, including sustaining and everything.
Thanks, guys.
Richard Hatch from RBC is online with a question.
Thanks very much. Morning, guys. Just a couple of questions on your debt, if I may. And firstly, just wonder whether you can guide us whether you have any headroom in your current facilities? And secondly, just on your ABSA facility, just wonder whether you it's due for repayment in March. Is that something that you'd look to repay, or is that something you'd look to roll? And then thirdly, would you be able to give any guidance on the covenants on your debt? Thanks.
Sure. I'll take that. On headroom, no, we've drawn our facilities. The project loans relate to the financing of phase one, Richard. You'll remember that phase two has principally been financed by the equity that was raised in 2010. And the ABSA 40 million that we put in place earlier this year has been drawn. We've been working with ABSA since 2004, and we haven't made any decision at this stage as to whether we'll renew or we'll roll. We're continuing to monitor the market and see how it goes, see how sales go. But I think that's something that Kenmare and ABSA will work on and work out in due course. On the covenants, I don't really have any major comments. The fact that we've gone through the negotiation, we've reached, what I think is a very good amendment for the company, as announced on the 1st of August, is evidence that the relationship with our lenders is in good fettle. So the covenants are fine.
Okay, thanks, Tony.
Cedar Ekblom from Bank of America Merrill Lynch is online with a question.
Thanks very much. Hi, guys. Just a few questions.
Cedar.
Hi. One, can you just give us the rutile production in the first half? I don't see it mentioned in the release. Maybe it's there and I've missed it. Then secondly, on the production guidance, you're maintaining your 850 to 900,000 tonnes. So obviously that implies a really big ramp up in the second half of the year, which is encouraging. Just on that point, when I look at slide 10, I see that production from the wet concentrator plant A was lower in June, July. Now I know that some of that, could be because of the sort of ramp up of the expansion. But my understanding is that there shouldn't actually be any sort of downtime on wet concentrator A, that it's more the processing plant where you could have downtime. So just to explain that fall in production. Then can you just give us a breakdown on your currency exposure on your operating costs, if possible? How much is pegged to the dollar, how much is pegged to the rand, et cetera. And then finally, a question on your financing flexibility. Now that we've built, or now that you guys have built phase two and it's ramping up, is there rationale for Kenmare to start looking at changing the type of financing that you have in place from being the project loans, which are more applicable to a development company, to sort of more generic bonds like other producing mining companies would have in place? Is that something you're thinking about?
Thanks for those, Cedar. Could I ask perhaps Yappy to respond to you in terms of the operations of Wet Concentrate Plant A, the expectations for the ramp up, and his view on rutile recoveries. Yabby, are you available to do that?
Yeah, certainly. Thanks, Michael. Morning, Cedar. Just in terms of WCPA, yes, you see a slight drop off in output for June, July. That is not related to the expansion at all. It was anticipated a slight drop-off as a result of lower grade in the mining phase. So it was always anticipated that we would see a slight drop-off. And it will fluctuate around that level, maybe a little bit higher for the remainder of the year. So WCPA has been performing very well. And will continue to do so in the mining conditions and areas that we are in currently. In terms of rutile production, I'm just looking at trying to find my my graph on what we've actually produced in terms of retail for
the year. I think it's about 2,000 tons during the period.
Yeah. So retail cedar has remained our challenge, and you would have recalled that in previous months that has been one of the key focus areas. But what we have consciously made a decision with the expansion and the tie-in of the expansion facilities that our focus will be on zircon. We have steadily seen the after the completion of the upgrade, which was essentially done in June and substantially completed by the end of July, we've seen a steadily increase in zircon, and zircon production and recoveries have been our main focus so far, with the team really starting to looking at the rutile production and recoveries going forward. Now, we've made some amendments to the circuits and improvements to the circuits with the expansion facility upgrades, and we would hope to see improvements in rutile outputs in the coming months leading up to the end of this year.
Okay.
Thanks, Gabby.
It's Tony here again, Peter. On Forex, it's the dominant currency for our operating and capital costs is US dollar. On the balance sheet, as I mentioned, we've $170 million of euro debt, but in terms of our day-to-day operations, in rand, I suspect we're probably looking at 15% local currency, 10-15%, a couple of percent in euro. And even all of the purchases that we make in rand, some of those include steelwork and whatnot, which would have an underlying US dollar driver. So in terms of currency exposure going forward, I suppose the principal currency is US dollar, which is matched exactly to our sales. The next one is rand, and after that would be the metrica, which would be the local currency. In terms of financing flexibility in our balance sheet, you may recall we touched on this actually in the announcement that we put out at the time of the AGM, and we said that we would look at optimising our balance sheet. And I think you're absolutely right that that's something that's sensible for us to look at. We have been looking at it. No decisions have been taken yet. We'll continue to monitor the situation, but I think it's entirely possible that as the company continues to ramp up, de-risk, and progress, that there's probably a more suitable bond-style solution, and that's something that we'll continue to review.
Are there, just a follow-up question on that, are there any hurdles to you repaying the project debt early? Do you have any penalties?
We do. In certain circumstances, the senior debt has break costs. They're not enormous, but there's a portion of the sub-debt, about half of it, from memory, whereby in certain circumstances there's a large prepayment penalty, 30%, which we've, I think, talked about in the past. But the other half of it can be paid without any penalty whatsoever. And depending on the circumstances, the larger penalty may not be payable. So I don't mean to be entirely ambiguous, but it does depend on the circumstances. But a big chunk of the sub-debt can be paid without any penalty, and that's something we would look at next year.
Okay.
Certainly it's not our view, Peter, that penalties would be a significant impediment to rationalizing the debt.
Okay. And then, sorry, just the last one. You are still very comfortable with your production guidance of the 850 to 900,000 tons of total product for the full year?
Correct.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks, Peter.
Letcher Tolley from Goldman Sachs is in line with a question.
No, that's fine. The question that I was planning on asking has been answered. Thank you.
Thanks, pleasure.
Jerry Hennigan from Goodbody Stockbrokers is online with a question.
Hello. Thanks for the call, Michael. Can you just confirm
Hi, Jerry. Yeah, that covers all products. And I suppose while we're still happy with the 5900, Jerry, I think, you know, I suppose we'd be more comfortable towards the lower end of that guidance.
Okay. And just on the issue with regard to pricing for that happened in the year, you obviously indicated, Michael, that, you know, the downward pressure to the price you gave earlier on.
Jerry, it's sort of a bit difficult to hear you.
Sorry, is that any better, Michael?
Yeah, much better. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah,
just with regard to the price you gave for ilmenite of 236 back in, I think it was April or May, you said there's downward pressure on that, obviously, in the second half of the year. Given the fact that you negotiate a lot of your ilmenite contracts on a biannual basis, can you give us any sort of a steer in terms of how much downside there is from that and whether how you see the second half of the year panning out? And just one other, if you can as well, obviously you've commented in the statement that Asian exposure is fairly challenging at the moment. Can you give us some sort of exposure in terms of how much production exposure you have to the Chinese market?
Last year we sold 18% of our ilmenite in China. But this year, with increasing supply coming from our expanded production, we would expect to bring that up to 22%, I think is our prediction, our forecast. And there's quite a wide range, Jerry, of prices that we are achieving. Some of them are above 200 and some of them are below. I think in China today, if you were trying to sell 20,000 tons of ilmenite, you'd be looking at between 150 and 200 dollars a ton.
Okay, thanks very much.
Muna Malaya from Marion Capital is online with a question.
Hi, just a couple of questions from me. In the second half of the year, could you give us a little bit of guidance on how much zircon you intend to produce? And also on your cash costs, are you going to revise the 160 million guidance that you gave before, given that in the first half is probably more or less came out less than that? And also you said you capitalized $5.6 million of costs in the first half. Is that all cash costs, or is it what proportion of it is in cash costs? And then lastly, on your loan repayments, how much of the loans are actually going to be repaid in 2014? Thank you very much.
I'll pass the zircon back to Michael in a minute, but I mean, we haven't disaggregated out our guidance. We've left it at 850 to 900 of total products, and I think we're more comfortable keeping it with a more generic level like that, Muna. On the cash cost of $160 million, yes, you're right, the first half year makes that look a little bit generous, but remember that this is a year in transition, very much a year in two halves, and so we would expect the cash costs to increase in the second half of the year. So I don't think it would be prudent to bring that down at this stage. But we are working on our costs. We've capitalized $5.6 million of cash operating costs. So those would be costs that would apply to, for example, employees that we've taken on, that would be training during the first half year in wet plant A, and then as the plant starts to operate, they transfer across. So they're there purely for the purposes of expansion, and hence it's exactly the same policy as other companies apply in this situation, and it's exactly the same policy as we apply for phase one. So they're cash operating costs. How much loan will we pay in 2014? Well, the senior loans that we will pay will be strictly according to the schedule that we set out, which from memory I think is probably about $39 million. And the sub-loans will depend on the amount of cash that's generated in 2013 And the key variable there, Muna, will be the revenue generation of the business, which comes back to the price debate that we had earlier. So that's not something that that would be akin to guiding on revenue and cash generation and profitability. But what's important, I suppose, is that the agreements that we reached with lenders on the 1st of August gave us quite a bit of flexibility, because what it does is it pushes out the date by which we need to make payments to sub-lenders by 12 months, which is to August 15. So we have quite a bit of additional financial flexibility in that sense in the company. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, sure. Thank you. Just a follow-up question on the second side, on the actual production in the second half of the year, the sales. How much do you expect to sell on contract, and how much do you expect to sell on the spot market? Or for Illuminate, that's what I mean. There's
We have significant because of the increase in production from the expansion. There is a significant amount of our sales which we'll be selling on the spot market. There's no doubt about that. But in terms of the exact levels, I'm not quite sure. Eamon, are you on the call?
Yes, Michael. It's probably in the order of about, for second half of the year, about 150 to 200,000 tons. But to put that into context, I mean, we've just concluded a spot sale into China for 40,000 tons just in the past couple of days. So, you know, they're not huge volumes, really. And that's generally the nature of the Chinese market. It's very much a spot market.
Okay. So, in other words, will shipments in the second half exceed your production?
I suspect not, Muna. We've seen an increase in stocks. I suppose it depends on how quickly the ilmenite market opens up. Eamon, I'm stealing your piece here. Go ahead.
No, I think what you said, Tony, is probably correct. I mean, I think we have to be a little bit cautious given you know what's happening in the Chinese market right now. So it's difficult to predict exactly what will happen. We've seen in the past China change very quickly. It goes from being very very slow to very fast. So, but I think at the moment we're seeing it more slower than it normally is. So we have to be a little bit cautious.
Okay, thank you very much.
Roger Bell from JP Morgan is online with a question.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Thank you very much for the call. Most of my questions have been answered. I just wanted to go back to a couple of items on the working capital. First of all, the interest payments on the cash flow statement were a lot lower than the interest charge on the P&L. Could you just explain that discrepancy, and should we expect a big interest payment coming through in H2, or is there some capitalised interest there? And then, just sort of more generally on the pricing outlook, at the sort of $200 or $150 to $200 per ton, you know, current price that you're seeing in the market, do you break even on the sort of free cash flow terms? And you know, in that regard, have you sort of gone back to your lenders to start negotiating further debt, further revisions to the debt, as you approach the sort of repayments next year?
On the interest, the situation is that senior interest is paid and reported on an accruals basis, and the amounts are really very similar. So there's no difference there. However, in the case of subordinated debt, it's like I described to Muna earlier, the interest is accrued and therefore reports to the P&L account, but it's not actually paid and doesn't need to be paid. It can be rolled up, and it has been rolled up in 2013, and that's why you see a difference between between the two. On the pricing outlook, I mean, 150 to 200 is just in China. It's not reflective of the rest of the world. And you know, you've seen the first 5 months was 236. So I suppose it depends on what happens in the future. You know, we've just concluded a negotiation with lenders. We are going to continue to speak with lenders, and you know, we meet them reasonably regularly. We'll be meeting them again later in the year. But you know, we just concluded one negotiation, so you know, there's nothing else that's planned at the minute.
And Roger, just to comment, you know, the major repayment of subordinated debt has been moved not to next year, but to 2015.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Once more, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press star, then one on your touchtone phone. Fletcher Tully from Goldman Sachs is in line with a question.
Yeah, hi guys. Just very quickly, I was wondering if you're selling any chlorite into China at the moment, or whether it's just sulfate.
We're selling sulfate ilmenite into China, but some of that sulfate ilmenite is upgraded into slag, into chlorite slag, for supply mainly to the titanium sponge market, and also to the slag producers that are exporting their slag to, you know, into the international market. So right now the chloride pigment production in China is very small. There's only one producer with a capacity of about 30 to 40,000 tons. They've expanded the facility, but they're still in the process of commissioning. There's a second plant that's being constructed, but again, it's under commissioning. It hasn't started up yet. So really the demand for chloride feedstocks in China is quite small, other than, you know, some rutile that's going into the welding electrode market.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you.
We have no further questions at this time.
Okay, well, look, thanks everybody for joining the call, and thank you all for your questions. And so I suppose we should just close the call at that, and look forward to meeting you all one-on-one when we next get around. So thanks very much, everybody. Bye.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.